Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you so much for joining this media briefing call with Monsanto. Today's call is focused on the dicamba developments that have been in the news the past few weeks. Our speakers today are Dr. Rob Fraley, Executive Vice President and Chief Technology Officer at Monsanto, and Lisa Safarian, Vice President North America for Monsanto. They will each have opening remarks. Also joining us in the room are John Chambers, our North America Technology Development and Agronomy Lead, and Phil Miller, our Global Corporate Affairs Lead. After Rob and Lisa's opening remarks, we will open the line and take your questions until about 2:30. The operator will give those instructions. I will now turn the briefing over to Lisa.
Thanks, Christy. First, I want to be clear that reports of leaf cupping in some states are deeply concerning to all of us at Monsanto. Helping farmers be successful is what we do, and we are very much in this with farmers and committed to doing our part to help. We have heard from many farmers across numerous states who are having incredible success with their Xtend crops, and they say that their fields are cleaner than ever, and they want to make sure they can continue to use our dicamba product. It is meeting a critical need, and that is why it is already being used on 25 million acres, making it one of the largest technology launches ever. Now, we need to be cautious about comparing year-to-year inquiries, given the large number of acres of product being used in its first year. Given the tremendous use of this tool already, farmers deserve the opportunity to keep using it. We also know the farmers who are experiencing problems in the fields, whatever the reasons, are frustrated, and they are looking for answers, and so are we. Like others in the agricultural community, we are working diligently to understand the facts and what's really going on. This is going to be critical so that the right decisions can be made at this very crucial time for farmers. As Arkansas has done, simply banning a tool that is important to many farmers' success at this late stage in the season after growers have already made their crop protection decisions will hurt more farmers and not get states any closer to an effective solution. We are encouraged by the approach taken in Missouri and Tennessee to ensure farmers continue to have access to this important crop protection tool. Both Missouri and Tennessee decided to prohibit the use of older dicamba formulations and allow only the sale and use of three approved new innovative formulations. As you can see on slide one, those older formulations are up to 100 times more volatile and therefore are not approved for use over the top. We think this approach makes very good sense. In contrast, we have Arkansas. Now keep in mind, our Xtendimax product was prohibited from being used by farmers in Arkansas before the season ever started. Farmers there had access to only one approved formulation, and it was not ours. As a result, Monsanto didn't have the opportunity to do training in Arkansas. Now that's disappointing because across the rest of the country, we had the opportunity to train more than 50,000 farmers and applicators. Their subsequent decision to ban all dicamba in Arkansas was premature since the causes of any crop injury have not been fully investigated. Even though we do not sell dicamba products in Arkansas, we are concerned this abrupt ban in the middle of the growing season will negatively affect many farmers in the state. It is worth noting that Arkansas, where we don't sell any of our dicamba product, has received more inquiries than every other state combined. To give you an idea of how unusual the circumstances are in Arkansas, let's talk about the neighboring state of Georgia. Farmers in Georgia have had a great experience this season, and that growing season is over now. And as you can see on slide two, we understand the state has received zero inquiries. So we are seeing our products really work well and make an important difference for farmers. That's why so many farmers want to make sure they can continue to use them. We strongly encourage farmers using dicamba in states where it's approved to make their voices heard. They can share how important this tool is to their farms and how they are using it responsibly, because we have heard those stories. Monsanto is committed to remaining actively engaged in doing our part to help farmers use the Roundup Ready Xtend crop system successfully. We encourage farmers with questions or concerns to call 1-844-RRXTEND. We also want to stress how important it is that farmers follow all local rules and label requirements. Farmers who are interested in our training can find information about that at our website, roundupreadyxtend.com/stewardship/education. Label instructions for our dicamba product can be found at our Xtendimax website. That address is extendamaxapplicationrequirements.com. Now, let me turn it over to Rob Fraley.
Thanks, Lisa. I've spent the last few weeks visiting fields and talking directly to farmers about our new Extend and Extendamax technologies. I've been to farms in Missouri, Tennessee, Arkansas, Iowa, Illinois, and South Dakota. Yesterday, I was in Illinois and spoke to 300 leading farmers. I asked those farmers who had planted Extend beans to raise their hands, and about 200 did. I then asked them how many had problems with the Extend technology, and all the hands went down. The point is, the vast majority of the farmers who have planted Extend beans and cotton on 25 million acres in 34 states and have used the approved over-the-top Extendamax and Ingenia formulations have had a great experience, and that's important to understand. On the other hand, I saw some fields with clear symptomology, especially in Arkansas, Tennessee, and Missouri. And I understand why those farmers are frustrated and are looking for answers. When I say symptoms, I mean leaf cupping, which can be caused by a variety of factors, including weather, disease, certain environmental conditions, and a variety of crop protection products, including dicamba. Misdiagnosis can be a real problem. Let me give you one quick example. Recently, we learned that some were speculating dicamba was responsible for cupping of tobacco leaves in North Carolina. But the facts show that it was really due to a calcium deficiency in those plants. My point is, this is an incredibly complex issue, and reacting based on speculation could actually end up doing more harm than good for farmers. There are lots of possible causes, but our goal is not to speculate. We need to gather the facts as quickly as possible, and that's why I went to see farmers. You know, when you stand next to them in their fields, you listen, you look, you learn a lot. During my visits, I saw some fields where there was clearly off-target movement from dicamba applications. These were easy to understand based on wind direction and symptomology patterns. Fortunately, most of the fields I observed were already recovering from the leaf cupping symptoms and should yield normally. During my visits with farmers in Arkansas and Missouri, I saw several instances of cupping that were not from drift because the pattern of impact was too uniform. Most agronomists will tell you that uniform corner-to-corner leaf cupping across an entire field is not consistent with drift and is symptomatic of another problem. For example, are those uniform patterns of cupping because of a problem with the contaminated sprayer unit? Are they due to improper off-label spraying of older dicamba formulations that have a propensity to vaporize? Unfortunately, many of the farmers and consultants that I met with commented that off-label use of the older generic dicamba products was high. In certain areas, they speculated that off-label use could approach 25% of the applications. Many noted that the sales of these products spiked this year, despite the fact that corn and wheat acres were down. And as you may know, these older products are primarily used on corn and wheat this time of year. The extent of the off-label product use was surprising to me and very troubling. It's also illegal. We know that the vast majority of farmers are doing the right thing, but it's clear that a few bad actors can make the situation worse for everyone. And again, we applaud the actions of the Departments of Agriculture in Missouri and Tennessee for banning the use of these products and increasing the fines for off-label use. Other fields especially LibertyLink soybeans treated with various glufosinate herbicides in Tennessee, Arkansas, and Missouri, also displayed uniform symptoms. But based on a careful look at spray boom patterns in some of the fields and aerial photographs, the farmers and consultants could determine that the symptoms resulted from some form of sprayer contamination. Now, some farmers felt they didn't clean out their sprayer units well enough, but others thought that some of the products they purchased and used might be contaminated. We are working closely with them to test glufosinate tank mixes and containers to determine possible contamination by other herbicides. And so far, we've analyzed 10 samples, and 4 of which were confirmed to contain low levels of dicamba. It's early, and these are preliminary results, but if farmers are having a similar experience with their glufosinate-treated fields, we encourage them to let us know by calling 1-844-RR-XTEND. Let me close by reiterating what I've heard from the vast majority of growers, consultants, and academicians that I've met and spoken with. This is an important new tool, and it is being used effectively and safely across the country. We need to look at every possibility and make decisions based on the facts, not speculation. We see how much our new dicamba products are helping farmers and farm communities in multiple states. And if states want to effectively address the inquiries they're receiving from some farmers, they need to consider all the things that can cause the problems and not just focus on one product that's working well and already vital to many farmers in this country. So we look forward to working with farmers, regulators, and other companies to understand what factor or factors may be causing the problems that some farmers are experiencing. And as we look to 2018, to next year, we're going to take the facts we gather to further enhance our education efforts with farmers about the best ways to use Xtend and Xtendimax technologies, and we'll continue to look at things that we can do to improve. We'll be happy to address that during the question and answer session. And now, Lisa and I'll be happy to take your questions for a bit. Thank you.
At this time, we will be conducting a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you'd like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment, please, while we poll for questions. Our first question comes from Jacob Bunge of Wall Street Journal. Please proceed with your question.
Hello, everybody. I had a question following up on Dr. Frilly, what you were saying there just towards the end where you were observing the uniform symptoms or talking to people who did in LibertyLink planted fields. I was not entirely clear. Were you getting the impression, talking to these consultants and folks, that that some of the products, the herbicide products that were being used themselves were contaminated? And do you have any idea how that would happen?
Yeah. So what I said, Jacob, and thanks for the question. Some of the farmers and consultants had raised concerns and speculated that there was sprayer contamination. And the reason you can pick that out is you can, look at the field by walking it or from aerial photography, and you can see the pattern of the sprayer boom on the field, literally where it turns and where there's overspray, and determine those kind of features. So farmers have asked us to to look at some of their samples. And as I mentioned, so far we've received 10 samples from farmer spray units, and we've analyzed, and indeed, you know, in four of those samples, we've seen a low level of dicamba presence. And we're at a very preliminary stage. We're working with farmers. We plan to collect other samples, and that's exactly what I said.
Okay. So this is the potential here that dicamba was sprayed through these tanks and sprayers, and the tanks or the equipment wasn't properly cleaned out.
That's certainly one possibility, and you know, a lot of times farmers are using their spray rigs to do burn down treatments with dicamba 2,4-D. There's a variety of other herbicides that will cause the leaf cupping phenotype. And in the particular case of dicamba, it's critical that the sprayer units are cleaned out. And as part of our best practices and recommendations, we have a detailed, you know, set of recommendations on how to do that. And that's clearly something that, you know, farmers acknowledge, and that's something that we'll put even more focus on as we think through our education with growers in the future.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Carl Plume of Thomson Reuters. Please proceed with your question.
Hi there, Rob. I have a question about the range of conditions that the dicamba formulation was tested. Are these, you know, how broad a range did you guys test under, and are these conditions representative of how farmers are actually using it?
Thanks for the question. And yeah, we've done exhaustive testing on the Extendamax formulations, and you know, we've you know, put a lot of effort into developing formulations that have, you know, dramatically reduced volatility. And, you know, that's evidenced in, I think, the first slide, where you can see that our Extendamax herbicide, you know, has, you know, conservatively a 100x reduction in volatility compared to some of the older generic products. I have John Chambers with me here, who heads our product development and testing group, and also Phil Miller. They can tell you about the extensive testing that these products have had over several years.
You know, maybe let me add in here, you know, we've been testing this formulation for well over a decade. In our filing to the EPA, we had to demonstrate all the market conditions that these products would face, and that's everything from temperature, wind conditions, soil types, and other environmental factors all has to be considered when they came up with both their robust assessment as well as what I would say is a very conservative label for this technology to make sure that it was stewarded appropriately anywhere it's used in the United States.
Okay, if I could quickly follow with that, you know, how does this compare to the launch of Roundup years ago? Were there similar growing pains for those of us that haven't been in the industry as long?
You know, that's a great question, and I, as I've talked to farmers over the last couple of weeks, you know, I can identify with the young farmers who don't remember back in 1996 when we launched the first Roundup Ready, and then I talked to some of the farmers who are more my age who went through that experience, and you know, I can tell you that you know, that first year of product launches was you know, had its moments. I mean, you know, we dealt with you know, concerns on tank mix and clean out. We dealt with some drift issues. You know, there were concerns and actual examples of spray applicators spraying the wrong sensitive soybeans. So, you know, my experience is that in almost every technology in that first year, you know, there's kinks that you need to work out. And I think, you know, as we look at, you know, the experiences we've gained from this year on the 25 million acres that the technology has been planted on, you know, I think there's things that we'll be able to look at and, you know, continue to make suggestions and change recommendations as we go into, you know, preparation for the 2018 planting season.
Thank you so much.
Our next question comes from Steve Davies of AgriPulse. Please proceed with your question.
Yeah, thank you very much for holding the call. Can you hear me okay?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
Yep.
Great. Did Dr. Braley, in your visits, did you see any indications of drift damage from dicamba applications that were made in strict accordance with the label?
You know, I would say of the applications that I saw, almost all of those where we saw drift was related to probably not having adequate buffer separation distances and spraying in wind conditions. Now, John, I know you probably looked at even more than I have. You know, very few examples of issues where products were applied according to label where we saw offside movement.
That's absolutely correct, Rob, that when we get out and we work with customers and investigate these situations, that the vast majority of the time would be where there is something that is done not according to the label. And our label requirements here are different than what we have done with Roundup in the past in terms of the nozzles, the timing of application, and all. So there is a learning that is going on with us and with our customers.
I just want to add, you know, those situations are very easy to look at and diagnose because you can understand the direction the wind blew. You can see the cupping on a neighboring field, and usually it's most severe, you know, closest to where the source was, and over the, you know, a certain distance it's reduced. Those are easy to spot, and frankly, most of those have already been addressed by the applicator and the individual impacted. And I think the good news, and I tried to emphasize that, is that, you know, if that injury occurred early in the growth of the crop, particularly on soybeans, you know, the soybeans are already regrowing and recovering, and, you know, in most of the fields I saw, I would expect them to yield normally.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Greg Horsemeyer of DTM Progressive Farmer. Please proceed with your question.
Yeah, Rob, this is Greg. I was there back in those days. I appreciate Jacob Bunch's question. One of the things that I would like to know is how do you square what we're hearing from the weed science community in terms of some concerns and the meetings that they're having and the discussions that they're having with their farmers? I mean, I've heard you make no reference to the weed science community here. You've referred to agronomists that Monsanto is working with and those kind of things. So how do you square what you're reporting that you're finding in your trips to the field with what we're hearing from the weed science community, which has pretty strong concerns about what they're seeing out there?
Well, I guess, you know, I've talked to quite a few of the university agronomists and weed scientists. You know, as I think you point out, there's a mixed view. I guess, again, I would point out back in 1996, there were mixed views by some of the weed scientists on, you know, the adoption of the Roundup Ready technology itself. You know, I think that, you know, in most of the places that I've visited and talked to, there's a strong recognition that, you know, the way I put it, you know, the enemy here isn't new technology. The enemy here are challenging weeds that, you know, pigweed and water hemp that are very difficult for farmers to control. And I think everybody realizes that we need new tools to address these problems. And I think you know, this is the first year of a important launch of this new technology. I mean, farmer demand for this technology is gigantic. I mean, you know, we're on 25 million acres of soybeans and cotton in the very first year. That reflects the high level of interest that farmers have in this technology. And I think, you know, most of the folks I talk to believe in the technology, and they believe that it will be used safely and effectively, and that's certainly what I believe.
Well, I can appreciate that. I mean, we certainly have the problem with weed resistance today. And again, to harken back, not to take too long here to let the next question come in, but I was there in 1994 at the Weed Science Society meeting in Seattle when the Australian agronomists came and warned about the ryegrass problems that they were having with resistance in Australia. And I then listened to Monsanto spokespeople say, "Oh, we don't have ryegrass problems. We're not going to have resistance problems." I was there in 1997 or 98 on the Delmarva Peninsula when mare's tail started showing resistance problems, and basically your response was, it's a control problem. We don't have any proof this is an issue yet. We don't know what's happening here yet. We need to be, not be speculative. I heard some of the same things. In 2004 or 5, I was in Missouri when ragweed started to show up and had a field day that I actually helped sponsor and had Monsanto's spokesperson say, we've got a problem here, but it's not a resistance problem, it's a control problem, and there's other things that are going on. So, what do we do, what do farmers do this year coming up as they're getting ready to buy seeds? Because that time is coming really quickly, to make sure that they don't cause a future problem for themselves, if indeed there is a bigger problem out there than what you're now thinking is out there.
First of all, I appreciate your comments, and I think we've all learned over the years on what are the best practices. You know, one of the things that we've been very focused on as we launch the new Xtend technology is to ensure that farmers apply multiple modes of action, both in soybean and cotton, because that's the very, very best approach to addressing the agronomic issues that you raised for managing weed resistance. And I'll ask John just to give you a bit of a flavor for specifically the recommendations that we're making. And many of these recommendations, have been developed in concert with the weed science community that you've talked about. So, John, in terms of our recommendations for multiple modes of action, maybe a brief description.
Yeah, Rob, we've developed in working with academics and others, regional recommendations to fit the different types of practices that our customers have. So these are going to include to making sure that we've got the multiple modes of action, ensure that we're using residual products early in the season and throughout, along with limiting the applications of Xtend or dicamba in crop to no more than two applications there, and again utilizing the multiple modes of action.